Welcome to Hope Is Here. Unfortunately, addiction is a problem all throughout Kentucky and across our nation. In fact, a recent survey said, research shows that almost 21 million Americans have at least one addiction, yet only 10% of them receive treatment. Today and over the next two programs this week, we're going to be hearing a story of hope, just an incredible story of a man that the enemy tried to steal, kill, and destroy with drugs and alcohol, but Jesus saved his life, and it's going to have a great ending story, so we want you to stay with us. But today we're just going to hear about how the enemy tried to take out this wonderful man, and his name is Marcelo Unterbug, and he lives in Dallas, Texas. And I met Marcelo back in January at a wedding that I did of a mutual friend we have, Tom Bohannon, and a guy that we both love a lot. And Marcelo shared his story. We had to sit by each other at the wedding rehearsal dinner, and I've heard a lot of stories in my 50 years and almost 19 years of ministry, but this is one of the most powerful one I've ever heard, and I wanted to share it with our listeners. But first of all, Marcelo, thanks for joining us in Dallas today. We appreciate it, man.
Hi, Greg. Thank you so much for having me. And I'm, you know, if I may say, I'm really glad that you and I got to meet at that wedding. And as you may know, you've played a significant role in that mutual friend's life. And so I just want to thank you for that. And again, thank you for having me.
Well, it's been a blessing. We both love Tom Bohannon, and he's been a real blessing to our Hope Is Here ministry. And so God just does ripples all throughout the country, and it's part of wonderful part of being part of the body of Christ. But Marcelo, tell us a little bit about your background. I know you live in Dallas now, but you didn't originally grow up there. Tell us a little bit about your background as a child.
No, I didn't. And, you know, with a name like Marcelo Unterbug, there's got to be a story in there somewhere. And I'm actually, I was born in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Spanish was actually my first language growing up. I came to the United States when I was about 4 years old. We moved at 4 years old. We moved to Dallas, Texas. And so I often say to people, I'm an Italian, German, Polish guy born in Argentina. Hence the last name Unterbug. And I always say to people, you can at least laugh one time at that last name.
Yeah, I'm sure you get asked lots of times on how to spell that, right?
I do, more times than you can imagine.
All right, so born in Argentina, you come to the States. Like you said, Spanish was your original language, but, I mean, you know, your addiction and problems and exposure, I guess, to drugs really happened at an early age, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. That's a good question. You know, I have one older brother who I often like to say, if he was sitting in the room or he was on the call, I would say you can blame him for the majority of my problems, as I followed in his footsteps a lot. And I, you know, my parents, being from another country, came to America. If they were guilty of anything, very loving parents, they certainly did not, unfortunately, raise me in the ways of the Lord. And that used to bother me a lot. But what I've learned now as I'm older is that they did the best they could. And I really don't think if it would have made any difference had I received some of that godly discipline early on. But if they were guilty of anything, it would have been overloving us. We might call that spoiled today. So coming from the old country, they wanted us to have everything that they didn't have. And me and my brother were allowed to basically run loose as two boys growing up in Dallas, Texas. And I smoked my first joint when I was probably about 8 years old. And, you know, I'll just go ahead and tell you, because people ask me, how is that even possible? And you know, frankly, my best friend at the time found a joint in his neighbor's house. And at the age of eight, and my brother, who's 3.5 years older, would have been about, you know, 12 years old at that time. You know, we smoked it. And really, that kind of started my journey of just at a very young age, getting into trouble all the time, sneaking out of the house, you know, stealing things from the local five and dime store at the time. And, you know, I always like to say, frankly, we weren't very good at it because we seemed to get caught a lot. And but that really started my journey. And by the time I was probably 12 or 13 years old, when drug use came to a temporary pause, I was already tripping acid, taking LSD, smoking marijuana regularly, again, between the ages of 8 and 13.
Wow. Now, were you still able to go to school and function even though all this was going on?
I was. It was at that time, even, I mean, it's crazy to think now, someone that has a father also, that I was doing that at such a young age, but I was able to quote unquote function, and it was still just recreational using. You know, I frankly didn't know at the time that it would only be a matter of years before I would become a full blown drug addict. But at the time, yes, I was. And, I'd mentioned at 13, I took a pause. I think what ended up happening, you know, in recovery, we talked, Greg, a lot about wearing masks or, you know, frankly, it's idolatry, the things that we put in front of God. And I would say that I learned when I was about 13, I started playing sports. I got into playing football and then later wrestling. And frankly, I found my identity in other things. I quickly found, you know, that my identity was found in what other people thought about me or how successful I was in sports or in frankly, in just getting girls at the time.
Well, I think anybody can relate to that during those critical years of 13 to 17. You know, we do care a lot about what people think, and especially of the opposite sex at that age. And yet, you know, I've heard so many people in adults just say how much sports helped them stay out of trouble and, you know, something else to focus on. And with the road you were headed down from age 8 to 13 with already, you know, the marijuana and then getting into the acid, LSD and speed and all, sports was a real lifesaver for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, I would say it is, or it was, excuse me. I would say, yes, it certainly was. I mean, it may have spared me, you know, at such a young age, maybe an early death. I don't know. But it certainly, you know, again, it's what I found my identity in at the time.
All right. So you get through high school, you know, sports helps you, but when did things start to kind of relapse, for lack of a better term, or, you know, where the drugs and the party and stuff became quite a priority again?
Yeah, no, I'll never actually forget really the moment that I really started doing drugs regularly again. I was at a graduation party for high school. So we had graduated high school, so I must have been 17 or 18 years old. And I remember I was at a party and somebody passed me a joint and I was in front of a lot of other people. And I can remember now, in hindsight, you know, 30 years later, I can remember at that moment thinking in the blip of an eye, I can remember thinking, hey, Coach Johnson, he won't care anymore. And Coach Johnson was my wrestling coach. And I just kind of ran in that just blink of a moment. I ran through, you know, all my teachers and all my friends, and I knew that high school was over. And so no longer what someone else thought about me was going to keep me from doing what I really wanted to do. And I reached across and I smoked that marijuana cigarette, that joint, at that graduation party.
Well, and I think, you know, it just for people listening, we all know it, but I just think it's great to be reminded how much coaches and teachers have an impact on us, and obviously had a big impact in helping keeping you sober there for those 4 years there, your freshman through senior year in high school. But then the graduation party happens, and you know, a lot of partying usually starts those things, and things started to spiral out of control. And you went to junior college, but while you were going to college, you had a pretty good paying job too, didn't you?
I did. I got into valet parking cars. The world is different today and how that whole industry works. But at that time, we basically would, you know, we could make $300-$500 a night, valet parking, cash money. And I probably don't need to tell too many people, if you take a kid who grew up with no God, no real direction spiritually, with not a whole lot of discipline and obedience, and frankly, qualities that I had in very limited quantity, things like honesty and virtue and character and integrity at that time in my life. Well, you take a kid like that, you mix in a lot of money. You know, it's probably a recipe for disaster, and it certainly was for me. At the age of 20 was the first time that I got introduced to cocaine, and I was valet parking one night. And my friend at the time told me, hey, go over to that car over there. He's got something for you. And I got into that car, and that person had stuck this thing in my nose. I didn't know what it was. And he told me to inhale. And that was 28 years ago. And at this moment, I can still remember what that was like. And at that moment, I can remember, I felt for the first time, maybe in my life up until that point, at perfect peace and ease. You know, no longer did I feel different. You know, I'm not a real tall guy. I'm maybe 5'7" on my good days. So all of a sudden, I didn't feel shorter than everybody else. I didn't feel like speaking Spanish made me different than everybody else. I was frankly, I was the tallest and baddest dude in the room. Any girl I could get her. You know, the word of God tells us that pride comes before the fall. And in that moment, frankly, I didn't need God. I thought I was God. And for the next 6 years of my life, the next 10 years of my life, I would chase that feeling.
Wow. Well, I know so many people listening can either relate to your story, or they're dealing with, you know, a loved one that's doing that. And I do want to remind you that the story does have a good ending, so we want to make sure you stay with us the next 2 days as we're going to hear about the recovery process. And then Marcelo is going to share with us also what he would say to somebody that's struggling with addiction in our third program on Friday, and also what he would say to parents that have a loved one that's struggling. So, but let me ask you this. When did the wheels really start to come off? I mean, obviously, you're having fun, you're making money, and, you know, the party goes on. Like I said, you feel like you're Superman because of how the rush of cocaine. But when did the wheels start to come off?
You know, it started getting really bad probably about 4 years into that lifestyle. I hope that happened faster than some, but maybe slower than others. But I went to my first of about seven total drug and alcohol treatment centers. I went to my first one when I was 24 years old. So by the time in that 4 year period from 20 to 24, really I started, you know, my parents began to notice a difference in me and how I was acting. I was already failing on responsibilities. And frankly, my friends and my family all around me really started seeing the change in Marcelo. And at the age of 24, I went to my first drug and alcohol treatment center. I wish I had stayed sober after that, but that's not my story. You know, again, as I mentioned, I would go to six more of those. So from the age of about 24 to 30, Greg, every imaginable consequence short of living on the street full time or death or long term prison happened to me. A couple years thereafter, after that first treatment, I started using cocaine intravenously. And for the last 3 years of my addiction, I became an intravenous cocaine user, experiencing just some of the most horrific consequences, legal consequences, stealing from my friends and my family, lying to everyone that knew me. You know, I would go on binges for 3 to 5 days where, frankly, all I would do is shoot cocaine. I wouldn't drink any water. I wouldn't eat any food. You know, one time I was driving on a highway while living that kind of lifestyle and occasionally pulling over to get my next fix. And I had the next thing I know, I woke up in the back of an ambulance being shot full of adrenaline because I experienced in a moment of a cocaine induced psychosis. I had a seizure behind the wheel of my car while driving down the freeway. When I woke up in the emergency room with two Texas troopers standing by my bed,
to interrupt you, man, but we are out of time today. But he's going to continue telling that story tomorrow. It's an amazing story how God protected him and other people driving. But tune in tomorrow as we're going to hear the story of an unbelievable recovery from a really, really heavy drug and alcohol addiction with Marcelo Unterbug. Tune in tomorrow. I'm Greg Horn. This is Hope is Here.
If you have been blessed by Hope is Here, would you consider making a donation to help this ministry continue to reach thousands in Central Kentucky every day? It's simple and safe. Go to our website at hopeishere.today, where you can make a safe and secure online donation, or you can find our address to mail a check. All donations are tax deductible and they are greatly appreciated. Please make your donation today at hopeishere.today. Again, that's hopeishere.today.